Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on American Freedom Radio for your listening discomfort. If you get a hell of a lot more comfortable listening to the show, you're doing it wrong. My very special guest joining me now is Simon Kaiwai, originally from New Zealand. Now, Simon and I have a very ironic arrangement. He's not allowed to come back to New Zealand, and I'm not allowed to leave. So, Simon, welcome to the program.
Hi, Vinny. Good to be back.
Yeah. Is it? It's never under positive circumstances when we speak, is it, bro?
Well, we have the odd social catch-up, don't we? You know, once every 6 months.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I'm sorry. I'm just very, very stressed and kind of all over the place today, and technical malfunctions and things just driving me nuts, and my back is killing me, and I'm tired, and it's hot as hell, and John Kay's the Prime Sinister, oh my god, it's just terrible for everybody, isn't it? All right.
Well, just the last one was enough, really, wasn't it? You know,
I know
the John Kay issue, you know, all the other stuff, I totally commiserate, but you know, just the bombshell that he's dropped on New Zealand, you know, 2 weeks' notice, basically that. We're going to lose the country.
Yeah.
And, it's a bit distracting, don't you think?
Well, that's the icing on the cake, isn't it? Isn't that his style?
Yeah. Well, yeah, he does it in big steps. I mean, this is really the coup de grace to the action that I took in 2009 against unlawful privatization without the public mandate. And that was looking specifically at an essential service. But this is like well beyond anything that I'd imagine, you know, so fast and so comprehensive, the step that they're taking. And they've looked at their position. They're working a couple of steps in advance. They're dealing with the legitimacy issue, how to deal with common law, how to deal with the independent nation that they're occupying right now, with the change of flag at the same time. And people have got a lot to catch up on and not very much time to do it in.
Well, that's the idea. They've got to basically get the knife in between the ribs before you turn around and put your heart out of reach of the blade.
Yeah. It's probably a fair analogy. I mean, it's by the time most people realize what's happened, it'll be too late. You know, you may as well have, instead of having this Weet-Bix flag that John Key's paying to put up all over Auckland for the TV cameras, I'm sure, to celebrate his signing of the TPPA, you may as well put a kangaroo on that flag, because it would just be, even though we pretty much have kangaroo courts now, it'll be well beyond what it is now. I mean, there'll be no chance.
Why don't we just have an American bald eagle? You know, that'd be much better.
Yeah.
I mean, it just gets to the point where you sit here, you watch no news, no information or anything like that, because it just angers you so much. Not because it's telling you what's going on, and that pisses you off. But they're not even telling anybody what's going on. Like seriously. I was looking through a couple of emails that I got from New Zealand Herald. You know, I just like to just, let's just say I'm a sucker for punishment. So occasionally I'll, look at these, you know. It's ironic. It's like the New Zealand Herald's morning wake-up, right? Like, when I think waking up,
thing on the list is the New Zealand Herald.
Because you're not going to wake up by reading it. If anything, you're going to go back to sleep, okay? You know what it's about, bro? Okay? You're not the number one story in today in New Zealand. The news is 346 sex offenders ruled unfit to drive a taxi. Are we covering the news about the entire country being taken over by ruthless criminal sociopathic scumbags in suits? No? No? Okay. What else is there going on in New Zealand today? Have we got something important, something of absolute rational, justified being there on the top marks? Well, we have a guy who got hit in the eyeball with a cricket ball. Right? There's the other top story. Hey, and you know what the other top story is? The humidity. All right, the humidity in New Zealand is going to ease, but not yet. Now, I don't want to actually just get off on a rant here, and I'm sorry, Simon, I know you've come here for a purpose, and I know that you've been doing a hell of a lot of research while I've been preparing for this show by going nuts. So please, if you will, tell us what the news are not telling us.
I don't subscribe to the mainstream media like the Herald and the like. It's just infuriating. But when you're on Facebook and you have a few friends that are focused on these issues like I do, a lot of them share these links to Scoop and Herald and the like. And it's easy to see from those that they're monitoring what people are sharing and countering it. You know, for instance, John Key got challenged on the Ratana Marae, and boom, there was a counter within like, you know, a couple of hours. And it shows that they're concerned, and it shows their level of integration and how quickly it's going out there. We're really waging a war right now, and I don't think they can reveal quite their nature at this point. So we still have their tool, like social media, Facebook, which is doing a real power of good, getting that information out. But at the same time, they use that tool and they monitor it, and all the information that they get from it, they adapt at the same time. But there are some shining lights in this case already. Firstly, I've never seen an issue with so much traction in New Zealand. People are angry. People are interested. People are active. People are forming into little action groups all over the place. And this is, I just get this from way over in Bolivia, but I get this from social media, and it's easy to catch a sense of that. And that's very, very encouraging. Then there are some individuals that are really sticking their hand up. I mean, one of them was Piti Wipu, a former All Black, a leader of the Haka, and he tweeted several times against the TPPA, and the last tweet that he did, 5 days after that, his French club sacked him without reason. And I'm sure that sent a pretty clear message to the other All Blacks that were thinking about it. I mean, Liam Meeson, another upstanding All Black, who also happens to be a leader of the Haka. Funny that, isn't it? You know, it's a real test of who's playing for the money or the shirt, or who's really playing for their nation. And these two are the only two All Blacks to date that have stood up. And you know, the long arm of the corporatocracy has reached out to Piti Wipu in France and had his contract terminated. So,
mate,
why that's a positive thing though is because he's done it. And he's almost like our first martyr in this court. And a lot of people that wouldn't normally take interest in this TPPA issue because they're, you know, interested in the circus of rugby have looked at that and are going, hey, that's not right. Well, what's this TPPA? You know, another example was the Wizard of, I think it's Golden Bay. He's scraped together some coins and managed to get across the ferry to Wellington, to the North Island. And he's going to walk the equivalent of a marathon every day to get up to Auckland to protest against the TPPA. And, you know, the country of the Lord of the Rings, you know, we have our wizard who's walking up there and, you know, he's going to be pulling out the "you shall not pass," you know, like if anything's going to get, you know, maybe we can get the youth with that too. But there's another shining light in this. Have you seen a few there, Vinny?
You know, to be honest, no. I've been on holiday. I've been trying to relax and haven't been really paying much attention to much, if anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's all right, mate. I can see you do a power of good. But this, I only found out, you know, 2 weeks ago that this TPPA thing like everyone else, is going to be signed. And the double whammy for the 12 nations, they're going to host it in New Zealand. So this John Key said, look, don't worry about the sheep in New Zealand. You know, they don't even think it's going to pass. You know, I promise them that we'll debate it in Parliament. They'll be quiet, and let's pass it 5 days before Parliament starts up anyway.
Well,
and he
it might have something to do with the fact that we've got 1.6 parts per million of fluoride in our water, as opposed to 0.6 parts per million as they do in American water. You know, it'd be like, hey, look, our guys are more heavily fluoridated, bro. Just come here. Do the deal here, all right? We're not going to have people in the street burning tires and dragging wrecked cars to block the road so that we can't actually go in and do our evil, horrible deal. So, you know, it'll be nice.
That's interesting. And so is the level consistently at that, 1.6?
No, because you're not allowed to... Let's just say they don't know what's in the fluoride that they put into the water. All they know is what they're being told is fluoride, which they're being sold from China, which has about 70 other different contaminants like cadmium, lead, arsenic, etc., and a cyanide. It goes into the water, the general water supply at a rate of 1.6 parts per million. So we're not 100% sure if it's just the fluoride, because we know for a fact that the fluoride we do dump into our water isn't pharmaceutical grade. So, you know, it's six in one hand, half dozen in the other.
Yeah, but for sure, it's a valid point. It certainly has an impact. And it's not just with fluoride, it's not just from drinking it. It's it goes through your skin, because the skin's porous. The skin breathes. So if you shower in it and you bathe in it, then... it's hard to avoid that exposure. That said, even though there is all of that that fluoride kicking around, people are angry, and people once they look at this information, they're really getting on board and seeing what they can do. And I think we need to find a way to really, even though we haven't got so many days, let's have a look at the calendar here. 4th of February, we're talking about, what, 9 days or something like that. We're still in the enrollment stage. We have time to enroll people, educate them, and enroll them into the fact that they actually need to do something. Otherwise, the country's going to go down. This TPPA is going to be signed, and it's going to be very, 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 very hard to much, much harder to repeal it than to stop it.
We have 9 days to stop a deal that's been in the works for like 9 years.
You know, here's the thing. If it wasn't being hosted in New Zealand, it would be near on impossible for us. Impossible, you know?
Just we did. Simon.
For the other nations.
I just thought about this the other day, actually. My wife was talking to me about it, and we were thinking about how many thousands of people will we need to actually block all the streets around the Sky City Convention Center, which is where we assume the do you call them dignitaries? Lice? I don't know the proper term for the people who are signing the TPPA, but how many thousands of people would you need to surround the facility in order to ensure that they could not enter or exit the facility that day? I was thinking 20, 30, maybe 40,000 tops. And here's the kicker. When we had a TPPA protest, I think it was in November, it was cold, it was raining, and about 15,000 people turned up, right? There might actually be a chance that enough people will turn up to block those talks from happening. Now, simultaneously to this, there is a car protest from Auckland Airport to Central Auckland City. People have been saying that they want as many, like, boy racer cars and everything like that. Show off your car and what have you if you want to. But the main point is to turn the route from the airport to Central City into gridlock. Right, so
let me obviously great minds think alike there, Vinny, and my average one's keeping up with yours on this idea. This is no strange idea in Bolivia, which is where I am presently. And in fact, this is how they overturned a free trade agreement called the TLC going through in 2006. They cut off the cities. And
were they all like sitting around and together in groups? Don't go chasing waterfalls. No, it was a TLC reference.
No, I mean I think there's so many. This affects everyone in New Zealand, and so we have to look in a more mature fashion than we have done in these last issues that have come up. The foreshore seabed, the last TPPA protest, which. Yeah, there were over 10,000 people that participated in that, and I take my hat off to them. But John Key basically ignored the Prime Minister, ignored that that protest, and when he was asked about it, he dismissed 2/3 of them as a renter crowd. You can find that on their Herald newspaper. Laughed at them, mocked them.
I love the irony of that. Like the guy with $50 million in his back pocket accuses other people of hiring people to represent his cause disingenuously.
Yeah. I know, it's funny. Yeah. The guy who's actually probably using the rental car. But, I mean, he's like a total sort of trying to be a lad's lad. Or I don't know if he must appeal to some people
The word is cunt. All right, just straightforward, yeah. Between the eye places, right there.
But here's the kicker. Here's the kicker, right? Last week, I think Sue Bradford was involved. I'm not going to belittle them, but I'll put up a photo on my on the blog that I've got up for this TPPA. She was kiwicandoo.com /TPPA blog, but I'll give you the link to put it up. Anyway. It looked like a ragtag bunch of 20 hippies that found out where John Key was going to be attending as some national celebration party or something like that, right? One of his party things. They blocked the entrance to it, and 20 of these hippies, just with the 20 there, his security team said they couldn't guarantee his safety and pulled the pin on the event. Just 20. You ask me, how many do you need? No, with the numbers that were just in the last hikoi, the last protest, the 10,000, you could close down Auckland. And I think we need to like not focus on the Sky City, because I saw the suggestion that the venue would be changed to the Auckland Museum, actually, and they would use the service tunnels to do it. I'm not saying that's the case, but one thing we know is that it's going to be in New Zealand. Okay. If we want to do, we are at the stage where civil disobedience is not only justified, but it's necessary, because we've already tried marching. We've already tried demonstrating, and we've demonstrated and we've been laughed at. He's ignored it. And only the insane try the same thing again and expect a different result, right? So.
You know, one thing we haven't tried is charging him with treason, which conveniently he changed the law so that you can't charge the Prime Minister of New Zealand with treason anymore.
Yeah. I think again, people have got a lot of catching up to do, because the whole settler parliament is illegitimate, which is why they're looking at changing the flag. So he can change those words on their papers, but it doesn't change the fact of the matter for the nation. The fact of the matter for the nation is that he's either a traitor or an imposter. And for the people that are inside the system and still believe that or don't realize the significance of changing the flag and don't realize that our nation actually has declared its independence, its sovereign independence in 1835, and that it actually has a heralded flag, sovereign flag of 1834, which was recognized by another sovereign, then yeah, they would think that he's a traitor. But in reality, it's more that he's an imposter. And so is their entire parliament. So it's perhaps a harder pill in terms of belief to swallow, but it's actually more encouraging because you can take a clean slate and go, well, we don't even have to deal with repealing these things. We can just go about building from a solid foundation.
What do you mean, like having all of this stuff annulled?
Yeah, it's all annulled. It's all annulled. But this is where the flag thing comes into it. So if they can say and convince people that we, out of our own free will and popular choice, chose their flag, whatever it is, this Weet-Bix design or the kangaroo one, as we're saying, you know, then we've changed the ship and it's their rules, captain's rules. And that's why they're doing it. But they've already fallen down because the first referendum, only 48% of the registered voters that they, you know, the people they deemed could vote, actually participated in it. So it's not a decision of the majority, this Weet-Bix flag. You know, it has no legitimacy at all. And even when they go to the second step for them is this: you can either keep the current flag or have our new Weet-Bix flag. And they're doing that for another reason too, which is even if people choose the current flag, what they believe is the current flag, that flag has never been popularly accepted. It was adopted. It was the Wellington Yacht Club's flag, and it was adopted in 1902, and it's not been heralded. It actually has no significance in law, although the corporate entities like the United Nations and the like will accept it because it's part of it's part of their corporate family. But in law, it's illegitimate. It doesn't represent the nation. The nation, that's that. If you scratch into the real history of, and I know we've spoken about it, is 1834, the heralded flag, which we don't have a video, but as I said, I'll put some links to you, and the Declaration of Independence, which allows us to go back to a village-centric society, which in terms of a modern lexicon is a local popular democratic society.
As opposed to the John Key village idiot-centric society that we have now.
We have a highly evolved modern democracy, modern representative democracy, and it's evolved to the point where the electoral platform has so many safeguards in place that you don't need a John Perkins, an economic hitman to come in because there are so many gates in front blocking a popular candidate that, and even after the fact, after the election, if a popular candidate somehow got through all the jerry rigging that the electoral commission does, admitted on the record, and the bias of the private media, which is plain to see, red or blue, and the candidate they select, then the Governor General, who we don't select, has to accept them, you know. So there are so many safeguards that, yeah, it's a highly evolved modern representative democracy, and it's if you have any faith in, well, the good thing about this TPPA issue is that it doesn't coincide with an election. It wasn't an election campaign promise or campaign issue,
It also doesn't coincide with a sporting match, which is what elections normally do coincide with, so that people don't pay attention to the elections because they're too busy watching sport. Now, it's I like the word evolution when it comes to describing our quote-unquote democracy, because it's evolved much like a shark. That's why it doesn't change much, because it's already a perfect democracy-killing machine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Sometimes thinking about my country, just thinking about when I was younger and idealist and all of that kind of stuff. God, yeah. The naivete. Well,
one thing they have done, which is a very, very smart move on their part, is they've put it right around the time of the Waitangi Day celebrations. the Waitangi Day meetings, which is very significant. I mean, that the New Zealand Parliament is their right to govern is claimed from the signing of the Treaty of Waitangi, and this is the annual marking of that, when there's usually meetings, and the Governor General and the Prime Minister, they all go up to Waitangi to meet with the Māori, and everything's okay. We've got a nice, you know, accord between the natives, and they gratefully gave over their sovereignty for our ability to govern in such a fine manner.
Yeah. Oh, and the Māori should be happy with it, because one day a year we make sure that they don't have to work.
Yeah. And so they've put it just 2 days before the Waitangi Day celebration, you'd call it. It's not really a celebration, but all that stuff. So they've split the Māori. The Māori are the ones that are more awake on this issue, because let's face it, it was their land first, you know, or prior to the settlers.
Let me just say something. They've seen all of this shit get taken off them before, and they remember what it looks like and what the cunts doing it to them sound like.
Yeah, that's right. So even though it's, you know, they're the most active and passionate on this, and what they've done by putting it just 2 days before the Waitangi Day stuff is they've split the Māori. A lot of them are going to Waitangi to raise the flag. You'll see the 1834 flag raised, and I don't know, you know, Honeheke actually had to do that twice. If you look at the history of the flag in New Zealand, the 1834 flag was flying there in Waitangi, which was the capital from the monarchy, and with this alliance with the monarchy, and then one day Hobson, the Governor General, goes and hoists the Union Jack, and Honeheke, who was one of the chiefs and quite a prominent chief in a very prominent tribe, had studied law in Cambridge, and so he knew the significance of you know, you take your nation's flag down, you know, you go to the moon, you put your flag up, it's ours, you know, and that's what they did without a shot being fired. They're trying to do it again, but he was writing to the Governor General and saying, look, you know, we need to talk. I'm here with my thoughts, and looks like you've stolen our nation. You know, you better come talk with me. The guy just ignored him. And so two times he had to take a force and attack and cut the Union Jack down and hoist the 1834 flag. So it's interesting. We've gone back to that. This flag's going to go back up, but I'm more concerned with stopping the TPPA being physically signed. And I take heart that 20 hippies, as I said, I'm sorry if you're one of them, I really, really respect your efforts, but I'm trying to say it to encourage people. If only 20 people can put the willy up, you know, up John Key to have him cancel his plans, then for sure just 10,000 that for sure demonstrated in the last campaign, if they organize themselves into small groups independently and closed with the intention of closing the city down, closing access to the airports, that we would achieve the same. Obama's not going to enter the city, you know, but you can't. I get concerned when I look at these TPPA pages and they're saying, let's protest, and we're all going to meet in this specific place, and we're going to meet at 12 p.m. on the 4th. Hold on, we'll meet at Sky City, you know. Hold on, what if the venue's changed? Hold on, what if they signed it in the morning? They're already in there. They've already had breakfast, you know. Like, this needs to be ramped up days before the 4th, if we're going to do it. And I suggest there's enough precedent. In fact, there's a lot of positive precedents in this last 100 years. If you get a movement with just 3.5% of the people behind it, you've got a more than 50% chance of succeeding in regime change, or, you know, these, basically we're trying to stop an oppressive government or a takeover. You got more than a 50% chance of succeeding. So that's why I say we're still in the enrollment stage. We need to use platforms like yours, Vinny, your efforts, and use whatever tools we have. Knock on our neighbors' doors, you know, message people personally, like really shake them and say, look, this is very, very important. I'm sorry to make you uncomfortable, but it's going to do you a favor, you know. we need to do something about it, and we need to be mature about it. If we really, I'd be very, very sad if we just see a repeat of another demonstration and heads are going to get cracked by the police, and it's going to get signed and on the news it's going to look all hunky-dory like there was a little thing, you know. We're not, you know, non-violent is the way to do it, but strategically you got to use there. If you're going to organize over the internet, you have to use encryption, and there are some free tools there. You've got to be, we've got to be, like surprise them, unpredictable, organizing everything transparently on Facebook, and organizing it for the day, halfway through the day of the event, is not going to be successful. And we don't want to show the world that we disapproved. We want to block it, right? We want to stop it. So let's learn from these successful examples and coordinate amongst ourselves as much as we can. And if we need to use internet technologies, as I said, use encryption.
Let's hope we can stop it, because the problem that I find with this is the lack of empowerment, right? This is actually one of the main things. If you're going to rule and dominate people, is to make them think that they don't have the power to stop you.
They're putting one of the pieces that the Herald put out was, you know, they're going to have what, like a mass of cops, or I've forgotten the exact terms that term they used. For sure, there's going to be a lot of numbers, and this is why I say the one thing we know about the TPPA signing, or the two things, is the date and the place. And the place is New Zealand. This affects the whole of the country. So if you're in one of these places outside of Auckland and you can't make it to Auckland, then I suggest that you look at what you can do there, because it is a national issue and they need to look after it on a nationwide basis too. What happened in 2006 here in Bolivia was that they had masses of like trees put on the road, rocks for miles down the highways. The country was closed down, you know. Like if you're doing an action, a civil disobedient, non-violent action in your place, then you're in your location, your town, you're helping those in Auckland, because they're not gonna. It's gonna be less batons on their heads, you know. And that's, we're in it together.
So we could encourage New Zealanders to commit as many crimes in full view of the police over the next 9 days as humanly possible, to just clog the system. I'm just joking, I mean,
strategic,
of course.
Again, strategic. You know, it has to be. We're still in the enrollment stage, but I think it's going to have to ramp up a couple of days before. And the idea of blocking the roads is one that puts the issue in front of everyone. You know, and if it does come to a court thing, a legal battle, then I'm very, very happy for that. Let's first look at the question of treason. Mm. You know, let's first look at the question of legitimacy before you even talk to me about your rules, your corporate rules and regulations.
There is, in fact, one profession of people that I would want on side for a protest like this: tow truck drivers. All right. I know a lot of people in West Auckland with cars that don't work, okay? And if they would be so kind as to remove any identifying panels and stuff like that, you know, like their license plates, etc., and get their mate who's a towie to tow their car into town just to plop it in the middle of a main roadway, right? To completely block it and have a whole bunch of them. So that you literally can't get in there and tow them out.
If you're out there, you know, you're blocking the road and you're a bit hungry or a little bit cold, you know, putting a little bit of gasoline in one of those old car tyres, you know, it could be a nice fire, a nice way to cook a sausage.
Well, see, in this environment in New Zealand right now, honestly, bro, the sweat's just coming off people and by the bucket load. It you won't need to worry about anybody being warm. They will be.
Yeah, they will be. So maybe it's just toasting some marshmallows then.
Or burning effigies of John Key, you know? Just be creative with it.
No, I say that because, you know, a line of burning car tyres, you know, you have to sort of, we don't want any martyrs. We don't want any, you know, people to be, any private or public property to be damaged, but we want the road to be, maybe it's a good idea to block the roads. You know, they can't sign what they can't get to.
The problem is whether or not they got, they freaking camouflaged. They're camouflaged, bro. They have suits. They could just be walking past you and you'd have no idea.
Yeah, I don't think so. No, they don't take, I mean, I've never seen, have you ever seen John in the middle of a protest against them? Have you ever seen Obama face up to a protest? They don't do it. They're cowards, you know?
Well, they are, and they've got a very, very strong fight or flight self-preservation instinct, as all psychopathic criminal scum do. But
here's the thing. Before I lose, I'll sort of jump in. But you know, we must be getting pretty close to that. If we work hard, we're going to get to that 3.5% mark, maybe 5% of the population. We really, really need to enroll and educate the people that we're in touch with. But at that 3.5 to 5% mark, that is the mark when the enforcement of the state defects to the popular will. And so it won't be a you know, heads getting cracked, which is what I want to see. I want to see it be peaceful. It's like it's an informed public asserting their will because they weren't given the opportunity to debate it and the opportunity to decide on it. And it's our nation. It's not theirs, you know. Some banker boy who you know has shares with these international corporations, who gets paid based on their profit, who's been hired to do this job to open us up for full exploitation and to give them our sovereignty. No, he doesn't get to have the say, and this is the only avenue we have to express it. So, and expressing it in that manner is not violent, and it's justified, and it's effective.
I like the idea of the banker boys, you know. It'll be like a little boy band, and we can talk about how they're going to Wall Street and stuff to party it up. Pop quaaludes.
Yeah, well, there was the Zurich study, which was the Swiss mathematicians that looked at global trade.
The 176 companies that own 60% of the world's economy, which means those 176 companies run the world economy, and they're only owned by, like, most of the shares go to, like, 8 people or something.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. And so it's those are the people. This is who that serves, and that dominance that they have for across border trades, you know, and in specific industries, they want to assert that right down to the bacteria in New Zealand.
Now, let's think about this, because I'm not feeling terribly optimistic. So I've got to be honest, okay? you told me what you wanted, to see, and I'm in 100% agreement with you. However, the gentleman's bet scenario kind of comes up in my head, and it just be like, we could have a gentleman's bet, no money down or whatever, that this TPPA is going to be signed 9 days from now, and our country is gone.
Yeah, well, let's run with that scenario, right? Which I would say at this point is likely, right? Unless I see a lot more dedication to people enrolling others. There are enough people that are aware of it now that if the people that are aware of it and have the key information dedicated themselves to passing that on right now, we have a chance of stopping it. But let's just say that it goes through, it's signed. This is where the flag comes in. You know, the flag gets decided shortly after, right? A couple of days, was it a day after or something? When is it?
I don't know.
Yeah, okay. Well, this the flag issue still going on, and that's the legitimacy. And it doesn't even matter. They'll never have legitimacy for that flag because they've already lost it. They haven't enrolled. There hasn't been a popular vote on it, and so there's still recourse. But you know, there was one nation in Europe, and I can't remember what it was, but it won its independence 500 years later. You know, it might be a question of that, Vinny.
You know, I think it's more just a question of, is your country currently run by ruthless, hypocritical psychopaths? Yeah. Are they going to try and do things that you don't want? Yeah. Do they give a fuck whether or not you want it? No, they don't.
Yeah, well, this is a blatant example of that. Very, very blatant example of that. And that's why it's such a good opportunity to wake people up on it.
Yeah, but this is the problem. You and I, we know this. We know this to be true because we have seen the blatantness. We understand what it is we're looking at, who we're dealing with, etc. However, there's a good chunk of the public, a very, very large chunk, I'm unfortunately very sad to report to you, who will still vote for John Key in the next election, okay? It says here, this is out of stuff.co.nz, headline, Key confirms fourth term plans. And he says, I'll stay as long as the party and public of New Zealand want me, John Key says. Now, what that translates as when you're talking to a hypocritical psychopath is, I'll stay Prime Minister as long as the New Zealand public don't wonder why nearly every journalist who is critical of me gets fired. Why no laws I break are allowed to be prosecuted in the New Zealand courts. Why, despite my long, long track record of lies, there are still people in this country who believe everything I say.
Yeah, as long it's...
Simon, I'm sorry to talk over you, but this is the point of frustration for me as a very cynical journalist who's very jaded, is that I've come to a realization that really makes me sad, like I want to cry, bro. The truth is not more powerful than lies. It's just not. Liars can just make up more lies. Easy peasy, you know? Just, it doesn't matter what truth you say. A liar can make up infinite lies for any one truth that you say about them, and they can keep changing what they say and what they said they've said. But the person who's telling the truth can only say the one thing over and over again, and because the person who tells the truth is not willing to endlessly, mindlessly repeat themselves over and over so that it drums into everybody's very easily malleable, mind-controlled brain pans. Mm. See? You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, but it's always taken a small, thoughtful percentage of the population, very small, to effect a change that it always has, right?
So I'm just wondering, though, because through my studying of history, I've seen so many great changes and things like that appeared to be great, which through the revision of the history have actually been really, really bad for people. Because we're misled and we're uninformed and we're...
This work that... what's her name here? I'll pull up her name.
Jane Kelsey? No?
No, Erica Chenoweth.
Oh, yeah?
I'll give you the link. Erica Chenoweth, she's on YouTube. Why civil resistance works, and she's made her doctorate on it, and pulled in 100 years of history, and it's for non-violent campaigns are twice more likely to work than violent. She only looked at regime change, occupation, succession. These are the three big things that if you succeeded through a non-violent civil disobedience movement, it almost guaranteed to be democracy at the end. And if it was democracy, a stronger democracy. So she's done the numbers. And if you look at her video, you know, she lays out, you know, what to avoid and stuff like that, and what's worked and how it's worked. So there's light at the end of the tunnel. I don't believe it's a lost cause at all. And while I want to shed a tear with you, Vinny, you know, I really do. It's very, very sad. It's actually a time to get mad and do something about it. And we still really have the ball in our hand.
Anger is more productive than despair. However, I did have a conversation with Bruce Rogan from the Mangawhai Ratepayers Association the other week, and I get into a very similar sort of mood when I was listening to him talking about the corruption of the local government and everything, and I expressed how angry it made me feel. Like, today I'm sad, but then I was angry, right? And he said, you can't get angry, because when you get angry, you don't think as well as you normally do when you're calm, when you're rational. Don't get angry. Get even, is what the old saying says. You have to very calmly, surgically, look at this problem in which we're dealing with and find the right tools, the right scalpel to cut out this cancer before it destroys the entire body.
Well, it's really interesting that they've chosen New Zealand as a venue. Yes, it's a highly fluoridated, you know, it's fluoridated capital of the world, as the stats would suggest. But it's also got a very, very strong warrior culture. It did. And it's still, they're respected soldiers, you know, and the thing that they managed to do is that it's controlled aggression. It's like our rugby is that, you know, it's controlled aggression. And as I said, there's still hope.
Well, you have to trust to hope, essentially, but yeah, I mean, I understand the situation. I understand that it's not going to be easy. We may not be successful. However, just because defeat is certain doesn't mean that resisting is the wrong thing to do. All right. Let me rephrase that. Even if defeat is very likely, resisting is still the right thing to do. All right? Because you don't really get a second chance at this, will we? Once it's signed, it's signed. We're fucked. Every country that's part of the signatory of this TPPA agreement, fucked. And it will never come back, right? Not without a global revolution. To foment a revolution in one country, very, very difficult. Sometimes takes decades of a movement building, and then one day, all of a sudden, kaboom, it topples over. But it was a pot that was boiling on the stove long before the people even had any recollection that there was boiling water on there at all. And then it just comes up to surprise them. There is a possibility of that happening, that there'll be something viral. And you know what? I was just thinking about this. Considering the absolute, and I mean absolute, importance for the New Zealand public to know about the TPPA at this point in time, it should be the one and only priority for New Zealand's alternative media for the next 9 days, you know?
Mm-hmm. I agree. Yeah. Well, it's like if it passes and it was all like smelling like roses and there was nothing to mark it as unpopular, then it's much harder to redress it later on as I see it. So, yeah, we have a duty to expose it and to oppose it. And even if we're not successful, it did market as unpopular, and that opens the gateway for future generations to redress it.
Can we redress these things? And it's always that time thing, and I'm always very wary of this type of dynamic. There's a reason why I don't cover news on this show. It's because as soon as the news comes out today, what you're getting is bullshit. All right. Even if you've got honest journalists trying to report the truth, they can't get to the truth in a day. Right? They can't get to it because these things are called developing stories. They keep going and going and going. So by the time you report something, by tomorrow you're out of date. Right? And so what this does is it just fills people's head up with bullshit so that they get confused and don't even want to continue reading the news about something. You know?
Yeah.
So let's think about this.
And the framing's very deliberate too. If you follow the news, then you're playing within their framing, you know. And it's hard to combat it. It's easier to stay away from it, approach the topics you want from the perspectives that you need to address it at.
Now, reading from this article that I mentioned before about John Key running from a first term, he's still pushing this this flag agenda. He believed the debate was generating strong interest in the flag and hoped Kiwis would make more use of whichever one won the referendum. It's just like, dude, okay, let me see if I can quantify this. Trade law is governed at sea by the use of a flag. Okay, if you change the flag, so does the strength upon which you trade and the strength upon which your country is governed. That's what's at stake when you change a flag. Simultaneously to this flag change, which I believe is the biggest frickin' distraction, particularly at this time, right? Don't talk about the TPPA, which will change your sovereignty. No. Talk about this flag, which will change your sovereignty, you know, because this is one you can control. This one, we're actually more than happy to have your say on it, because we're going to do whatever the fuck we want anyway, and because no New Zealand referendums are binding. Thank you very much. So it's going to cost us a hell of a lot to have our say, and then it doesn't matter what we say, all right? Then we have a trade deal. Now, having a look at trade deals, if you go back, you don't even have to go back very far. Any period of time where you look at, quote, free trade deals, whoever is not the United States giant corporations, if the United States is involved in said agreement in any way, shape, or form, you get fucked by said trade agreement. Every single time. Without fail, without question, without extenuating circumstances, that is what happens. And I'm not saying, you know, bagging the US or anything like that. As we said before, the same people own all the corporations. So if it benefits them any, it won't benefit you. Okay? It's just that simple. There are only so many seats at the table, and you will have to get the scraps that are thrown to the dogs in terms of trade. That is what our country, just our country, right now is faced with. Everything that we've ever held dear is under threat. Everything that gives this country a solidification of any of its independence in the current international climate could get erased forever if the TPPA is allowed to pass. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the important issue of our time. And conveniently, you only have to pay attention for it. Yeah, exactly. Let's block the TPPA in the next 9 days, and if we pay attention to this issue and we go absolutely crazy as ape shit as we should, we might have a chance of stopping it and some chance of saving this country. Saving the world from globalist banksters is worth the effort. Even if it's not successful, you owe it to yourself, you owe it to your ancestors, and you owe it to your forebears to fucking try. Do not fail. We'll be right back after the break at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Thank you very much for listening. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show. AmericanFreedomRadio.com. My guest is on the line, but just before we cut to him, today is my 2-year anniversary being married to my lovely princess, Sarah. And that made me happy for kind of a few seconds when I woke up. But then I thought about it for a minute, because we planned to go out to a nice restaurant called La Rosa down the road from us, because we've never gone there together before. She's gone there with her friends to have a drink on occasion and a meal. Sometimes I've actually paid for her to do that, so she can actually have a night out. But we can't afford it, because there's bills due for power. That's $110 for water. That's $35 for internet. It's $130 for rent. It's $250. And Sarah needs a warrant of fitness for her vehicle as well, which is another $35. I mean, we don't have enough money to pay those bills, let alone go out for like a $100 dinner. Now, the worst part is my back's killing me, Because I had this, you know, Swiss ball, you know, those inflatable ones. It popped like a balloon, and I fell right on my tailbone last week. So if there's any listeners to the show who are a chiropractor in Auckland who'd be willing to donate their services to me to help suss me back out just on a regular donation type basis, please get into contact with me, because I'm actually barely holding it together. Back pain is so, so terrible. I know a lot of people know what I'm talking about. But anyway, there's nothing in this entire house that's comfortable to sit on, right? Because I had like two other ergonomic seats, and including the Swiss ball that kind of counts as an ergonomic seat as well, they broke, you know? It's like planned obsolescence, bro. I need something sturdy. My hands are very sore from doing gardening work and helping my sister move house over the weekend. I didn't have a radio show guest organized for today. I mean, I had that. Man, I'm just very lucky that I am who I am, and I can, you know, organize stuff like that relatively quickly. But, you know, we've got a flat and fit inspection tomorrow as well. Sarah had work today, so she's just wiped out from doing her gardening work. And this means basically I had to spend our second anniversary broke at home in pain cleaning the house by myself, you know? I mean, the reason I help people in need is because one day when I'm helpless, I hope somebody's there for me. So for anybody who's listening to this broadcast, please, I'd really like your help today. If you want to go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com, there's a Kiwi Bank number on there, and there's also PayPal buttons. We very much appreciate your support today. However, on to a worse note, we're going to go to my guest now. I'm not saying that the guest is terrible. It's Thomas Lakovara-Stewart. And he's coming at us now live from Burns, Oregon, I believe. Thomas, welcome to the program.
Hey, what's up, man?
Well, I think you just heard what
I... Yeah, man, I just heard, yo, that's ouch. Well, I've suffered with back pain most of my life, and I've gotten some therapy, and I don't know what it's like down there and where you are, but we do have medical cannabis and Rick Simpson oil, and finally we've been fighting back against the globalists that have been keeping it from us, and Big Pharma that's been keeping it from us because it cures so many darn things.
Unfortunately, New Zealand has a man called Peter Dunn who every time he gets elected, he signs a deal with the government guaranteeing that for the next term of parliament, which is usually 3 or 4 years at a stretch, there's going to be no change to the cannabis laws at all. And he's done that for the last 12 years in a row, bro. 12 years in a row. That one guy is
dude,
just...
that's not cool. Man, that stuff heals, man. And not only does it heal, it cures cancer. I watched it cure 3 people of cancer now. So not only are they withholding from the people something that's beneficial and healthy, they're also keeping the cancer cure away from a lot of people. And also, I've watched it reduce violent seizures in young children, that you were having many seizures a day, went down to 1 or 2 seizures a week on Rick Simpson oil, which is a cannabis product. So I would have to tell your psychopathic, whoever his name is, man, what if that were your daughter that were seizing? What if that were your family that had cancer and you knew that there was a treatment that might knock it out, and they wouldn't have to go through all that toxic treatment?
He doesn't have a problem with that, Tom, because his son owns a really big artificial cannabis company.
No way.
That does happen to be legal right now because of laws that...
Of course it is! of course it is, and it's probably void of all of the proper cannabinoids that actually cure you of illnesses, and just probably leaves one that makes you feeling a little heady so that you won't kill them.
Exactly. Just watching New Zealand news just makes me cry out, fuck me, sideways! Why did they... But anyway,
that's a shame.
That's a fortunate thing that for those people in Oregon. However, we have a much more negative thing, and I usually don't bring this topic up on this show. You really don't like to pull the network into it.
Do you have the music ready?
No, I don't. But yeah, today's one of those days, ladies and gentlemen, where we're going to talk about somebody who used to be a talk radio show host on this network, a former Marine who got Semper fired from the network because it was a sociopathic scumbag. Those people might
know. It wasn't because he was a Marine.
No.
Because he was a Marine. It wasn't because he was a Marine, because he absolutely, absolutely was a Marine who loaded stuff up a lot.
And now he's busy loading a lot of other stuff. Like, for example,
he's loading some stuff up, man. But you know, he's out there in Burns, and he is reporting, and he's doing. I have to admit, 80% of his reporting is actually stuff that people really need to see. I went out there not originally lined up to gun him down. That like he reported in this video he did of me. Actually, I'm kind of flattered. I'd like to thank him because you know. Bad publicity is good publicity, because with bad publicity, I can turn around and tell people the truth. So, and in a non-sensationalistic way, in a non-exploitive way, I don't exploit children like he did. God, they sent a camera. Vinny, he sent a camera to go and capture Blaine Cooper's wife, grabbing the kids. I guess CPS had picked them up and dropped them. It's a really personal issue. I really don't want to talk about it. But the point of the matter is that he released a video of this event. And then turned around later and concocted this paranoid scenario that I traveled all the way from Texas to Oregon just to bring him down and expose him as an FBI agent, when I just actually went there to cover the story, which was the job of alternative media, and which is a job that I had until, guess what, Pete Santilli started an argue with me right in front of the headquarters building of where they were doing the Mount Hoover thing. Got in my face, said some things that were off color. And he knew how to push my buttons, and he did. And we ended up toe-to-toe, and two guys kind of got in between, and he walked away like the typical punk that he is. And I hate to say it, I wanted to be nice about it, but he defied something that Ammon Bundy specifically, I was told, was going to ask him to chill it out, because it was not true. And also he smeared me to a lot of other people, saying that I had gotten kicked out, and which Ryan Bundy can very easily tell you that it was my choice to leave, and actually I chose to walk out of there because A, I couldn't cover it properly because of what his trolls were doing. My stuff was being moved constantly. It was insane. He had little arms in the camp just doing his bidding, and it's just sick, not healthy.
It's like a cult leader, huh? I watched the video this morning, Tom, of him.
He puts out a degree of it's almost like reality show style porn. And what I was trying to advocate was a clean Christian message of truth. Give me the facts. Let me take the facts and report the facts. The facts only, without all of the, the whole matter is that there are people's lives on the line, on both sides here, okay? There's understandable and righteous constitutional stand, and on the other side, you have officers, and I said this inside, I'll say this outside, I'll say this in front of anyone, I do not ever want to see Americans having to aim their guns and shoot at other Americans because a bunch of globalist scumbags are pulling the strings like puppeteers, and that is what is going on. The truth of the matter is that Santilli and I are irrelevant to this entire situation. The reporting as you see it, the way you're seeing it, even from the alternative media, it's spun to make these guys look brash and harsh and like Y'al-Qaeda type image. The whole psychology behind it, I know exactly what it is. And unfortunately, no matter how much you can know that something is really wrong and that you need to do something about it, as much as you might really want to protect and save people's lives, sometimes you just have to report it and walk away. And I think I took a step back in order to get the focus back onto what it should be, which is the Hammonds. And that is why I made that choice. It was my choice. I was embedded as a journalist. I stand on my First Amendment right to report. I did nothing but protect myself and stand for what a cause that I believed in. Regardless of whether I believed in how it was done, I have a First Amendment right to report facts. Facts of the matter are that Ammon Bundy and Ryan Bundy, I believe to be of pure and clean heart. I believe them to be salt of the earth type of people. Second factor involved is that the Hammonds, who are also similar traditionally, however, analyzed separately, because each individual should stand up for their own. I will go by what their neighbors and their friends have said. Their neighbors and their friends have said that they were upstanding people, that they were good neighbors. Greg Walden, the representative from their state, stood on the House floor once the situation developed and said that not only had the BLM overstepped, but they had overstepped misusing a law that was never designed to be used for the way it was used against people who actually had not committed a crime, but that under the act, having absolutely nothing to do with looking at the situation for what it was, which was individuals who lit a backfire to stop their house from being burnt from a wildfire that was headed their way, which is, by the way, as a former firefighter, I can say that that was the exact appropriate, correct way to go about it. I can also say that the federal government's use of buildings in this situation is extra constitutional. It's unconstitutional. The authority that they're acting upon is an authority that is not one that was created from the people, which created the states, and the states, which created the federal government. That is the food chain. Unfortunately, the food chain is not being respected. The Constitution is not being respected. And they knew. This is the problem, Benny. And this is something that people need to hear and know, is that they knew that somebody would act, because they knew when they went after innocent people for a crime they didn't commit, that the beliefs in these people go back so historically and so vividly and so strongly that someone would react. They had to know it. The judge himself in this case, the judge himself said, I could not sentence these people to the mandatory minimum, for if I did so, it would be a shock upon the conscience. And sir, he resigned from the bench. He stepped down. He retired. That case. That was his last case ever. So that, in and of itself, is kind of like an exclamation point, Ben.
See, no, I've never heard that. Nobody reported on that.
It's been reported, but it's been lost in translation, as we say, with all of the antics of what is similar to a reality show television program that's being tried to be broadcast out of there, with some support from some of the militia around. I don't agree with, but that's my opinion. And here's the thing. It is my opinion. I never said anything about Pete Santilli being destroyed or anything like that. I have a difference of opinion, and I have a difference of journalistic integrity. I watched him do some things before I even got there that I and someone who I trust and who many other people trust saw as a red flag that maybe it was just being ignored. I saw paying customers that were being locked out of the chat room who were just out-and-out upward supporters of the Bundys and also wanted to know how they could help. This is what I saw, and this is the truth. And it's not sensationalized. It's not vindictive, because I've actually, I don't know what your spiritual faith is, Finn, but I had to really think and pray on this, because I don't want to do anything that would detract or hurt the Bundy's message. And Thomas, I think
you sound like you're in a lot of pain right now, man. Like
I am, dude. I am.
Can I just ask you, what specifically can you outline? And I know this is difficult because Santilli's come after me, and I know what I was like in those first few days when I was under full on assault. You can't think, you can't feel good about anything. It's a constant cloud made of barbed wire around your entire person at all times. I know exactly how you feel, brother, but...
But you know what? You can't be afraid to do it. Somebody's got to do it. Somebody's got to show people...
Oh, bullshit, bullshit, Tom. You can be afraid to do it, but that doesn't mean you don't have the courage to do it anyway.
Well, I did. I got painted too, Ben.
Please tell me, bro, because I really, really feel it on you, and I know how much it helps just to tell people exactly what they've done to you.
I'll tell you exactly what happened. I went into a situation that was dangerous and volatile. I have never committed a crime against any human being where I've ever harmed anyone, threatened to harm anyone, or put anyone in harm's way. I was painted with a ridiculous, stupid felony of which they had to restore my civil rights, and they tried to not restore one. The Supreme Court has already kind of ruled on that, and they basically ruled that you can't just selectively choose certain civil rights that you can grant and certain civil rights that you can't. It defeats the purpose. The entire purpose of civil rights is equal and unified. If I was a threat to the community, if I was a threat to society, I would not have stopped with my own hands and my own body two robberies from occurring in the state of New Jersey, one of being Elk Township, New Jersey, a town that I lived close by to, where a man walked in and said, "Hands up, this is a stick-up." And I did not think. I did not hesitate. And I slammed that guy straight up against the wall, knocking him stupid until the police arrested him. Now, I don't know what became of him or that case, but I assure you, your listeners, and everyone out there, I am a man of honor. It was a rough time I lived in my life. I went into a situation that was volatile, and I went into a situation where everyone was carrying weapons. I am not uncomfortable in a situation where everyone is carrying weapons. I would be uncomfortable in a situation where everyone was carrying weapons and I was not. I know that people may disagree with me or whatever, but I went in there with good intention to report the truth. I didn't go in there to hurt, harm anyone. I certainly didn't go in there to stand against anyone. Which is one of the reasons why I just wanted to report what I believed that the Bundys' message was, and I believe that the Bundys' message is that they want the people to have the land. They want the land to be returned to the people. They want the hikers to be able to hike, the loggers to be able to log, the Paiutes to be able to come and share in the land, everyone to be able to share in the land, and everybody benefit from the land, and no one to be cut off from the land. Whether or not people agree with how that situation occurred or how it did not occur, that is the way it is. So I reported on that the way it was, and I protected myself. But no one really knew much about it, and I did not flash. I was not flashy or anything like that. But Pete Santilli decided to announce on the air that I was an armed felon. Now, keep in mind, Pete Santilli was pulled over in Ohio with a loaded firearm in the front seat with his bag open. Okay.
With extra ammunition, and he didn't have a concealed carry permit.
Right, exactly. And I never carried concealed. I was not trying to be there, and I was the one inside saying, I don't want anyone shooting at anyone. I think I've said that to everyone. Everyone that's in there can testify to the fact that my intention was to get the story, to get the word out, put the word out about the Hammonds, to report the truth as I saw it, and I had the right to protect myself, and I did. And against what? All enemies, foreign and domestic. I took an oath. So my oath was to protect and defend in an area where I was told that there was no law and the law was acting lawlessly. And of course, I was pulled over by the chief of police, which was one of the nicest men I met in all of Burns. I have a high amount of respect for the chief of police of Burns, which is the only guy I met. The people that I interviewed felt as though the sheriff in this, Sheriff Burns, was an honorable man who was a ranger. He was a veteran and kind of gotten thrown a couple months into this position where He was damned if he did and damned if he didn't. And that was their opinion. I have my opinion as to what I think should have happened with the Hammonds. I also have my opinion as to why I think it wasn't done with the Hammonds, and I don't think that had much to do with the sheriff. I think that had to do with some other corrupt individuals involved, and I did an interview with some locals, and it's, of course, that's all opinion. There's no documented fact, but it's an interesting interview, and they testified to what they did, and they basically named a few names, and they made allegations, and that's theirs to make. I wasn't there, and I don't know. I'm reporting in the whole point that I went there, even though I have, I guess you could say, an ethical appreciation for what Ryan and what Ammon stand for. They believe in the Constitution. They believe in it in its literal interpretation. And as I see the degeneracy of society and cultural Marxism all around us, and it disturbs me greatly because it breaks with everything that I've ever been taught to love and to embrace, I have to agree. I have to agree with them in many ways. I was not there when the refuge was taken. I went there to report the truth. That's all I can say. I think that ultimately lives and safety are paramount. This is a very volatile situation.
Let's think just give me a second here, because I want to actually outline these parameters for everybody. So let me see if I have this straight. In Burns, Oregon, there's a nice little reserve, essentially, that is technically public land. You know, people are allowed to go hiking there and hunting and fishing and so on and so forth. They're allowed to use the land. It's public land. Yep. But what the BLM has been doing, in accordance with the Agenda 21 protocols, is essentially they've been walling around the United States, confiscating land that was once public land and basically making it off limits to human activity at the behest of the government. But it's not actually going to be off limits to human activity. What it's going to be is off limits to normal human activity, and it'll be on limits for things like uranium mining and other things which are going to be sold out to the major corporations that already own the government via lobbyists. Now, on top of that, we have a couple of ranchers from out of state who have traveled all the way up there because they had a virtually identical case a year or two before. I believe the original Bundy Ranch case was in 2014 when they had their standoff with the BLM. And if that is the case, then they're technically, regardless of whether or not they live in Oregon, there actually isn't anybody in the continental United States better qualified to be in Oregon right now commentating and protesting on behalf of the people of the United States. All right, now, have I missed anything out? Have I encapsulated it quite clearly?
No, sir. No, I think that you have it pretty clear.
All right. Now, Here's where the rub comes. Infiltration. All right, this is the reason why a number of people have asked me, not nicely, mind you, why, Vinny? Why have you tried to expose Pete Santilli? It's a terrible time to do it. You know, we should all be together. We should be fighting the government. And it's like, look, dude, okay. First of all, we've got a fax that he sent to the FBI confirming, in fact, that he was one of them. All right? An agent. An asset. Right? Indisputable. We've verified the document. It's very unfortunate that people have been listening to somebody who's a paid FBI informant, and we know that the United States government is prone to putting people who are, shall we say, shock jocks and talk radio show hosts on the payroll, because they're very, very good at having crazy, violent people contact and ask to help them, who then get reported.
It's kind of like the Alex Jones thing, dude. And I'm not against Alex Jones, but hear me out. I'm not against anybody. I'm not against Pete. See, that's the part of the problem here. The perception is that I was on this all-out attack of them. The only thing that I said was that there should be a good, clean, crisp message. There's a lot of ranchers out there who are listening. I spoke to people in the town. I got a pulse from people in the town and what they were looking for. Okay? I am ultimately a reporter. And I got time and time again from the store owners, from people that I spoke to, you know, just in coming and going, that they wanted a cleaner message. And that's what, if that's what the people want, that's what I'm going to take them and that's what I'm going to suggest. Well, I got painted because I suggested, how dare me, that perhaps it might be a good idea to just release news and do so matter-of-factly without the whole...
I've got my constitution,
The reality show thing is what I was talking about. And it was all it was a criticism. It wasn't a... it was made out to be like, oh, Tom Lacavera Stewart, he wants to take Pete Santilli down.
Tom, can I say something?
Dude, it's not... It's insane, man. Paranoia.
I do. I completely understand. But it was Alex Anseri from Outside the Box that actually kind of... He said something on one of his broadcasts that I was just like, oh, my God, he's right. And it's, what he said was... What Pete Santilli does when he goes to these events is he attracts people who are stupid and crazy, right? People who have mental illness and an inability to think.
That's actually kind of a good, that's a good point. That's because he doesn't just do straight reporting. It's emotional and dramatic. And yeah, I gotcha. Yeah, you're right.
No, I'm not right. Alex was right. He just hit it right on the head.
And that is right.
Whoa. And now, that means that just because
it's
he's
Jim
there...
Jim Jones-ish, dude. It's Jim Jones-ish. And it really is... it is what it is, man. That's what I'm going to call it. I'm going to call it Jim Jones-ish. Because he ends up with a little cult following. Dude, I was watching him zap people out of there, left and right, out of there. They had this this live YouTube stream where people that can chat and talk, and they're the people that are sending money and stuff like that. And people would send some money and then ask how to send money to onto the refuge or whatever, and boom, zap. As this, and when it was a couple of moderators and one of my friends and I noticed a pattern of behavior that was going on, it was a red flag. That's what you call a red flag. And I'm sorry, but you know, out of all the studying of history that I've done, and by the way, that's one of the things that I went there for, was to bring historical documents and court documents, and hope that a legal case could be made for an argument of jurisdiction. That was my intent. That was what I went there with. I shared with the Fox News reporter. I shared with the Oregonian. I have passed on my research and Bruce Ray Riggs's research. From my host on Resurrect Republic, Dirty Uncle Sam, on RBN. We stand by our research, and I'm not with the militia. I'm not with anybody. I'm just reporting the truth. And there have been threats against my life. And there were threats against my life, by the way, before I ever got there. so somebody's worried about just plain truth being reported. I just want to report what I see. Like the artifact thing, we released a video. You don't have to touch anything, right? You're a reporter. You're a reporter. They allowed reporters in and out of there constantly, and that's what I intended to do. But we saw these specimens. I guess they're exhibits or whatever that were bagged and tagged. And you look closer, and they were projectile points and skinners. And of course, we left them alone. We videotaped it and we made record of it. And turned it over to the refuge, and they uploaded it. Blaine Cooper shot the video. They uploaded it, and you could see it for what it is. You can go to RTR Truth Media and see it for what it is. There were artifacts that were being stored down there that had rodent's nest in them, and they've been there for 30 years. It's not the relics that they're protecting there. That's a narrative. And when you find out real truth and real narratives, you become the target of certain entities, and certain entities need to take you out because, Lord knows, God forbid, you should have more than one or two reporters there.
Thomas, I came up with a term this afternoon just before coming on the show. I was trying to define who are these mentally deficient or mentally unstable people who come to these kind of events. Now, I'm not saying everybody, right? But we do know from the boots on the ground that there are a lot of really stupid and really crazy people there. There is no doubting it, right? And what do we call these people? Here's an idea: freetards.
Well, hold on a second. I want to make this clear too. There were some. It does attract all kinds. It does not just attract. I'm not saying Pete Santilli. This event, this historic event, whatever you want to call it, it's going to attract special attention because of the way a couple of the other ones went that went really bad, and we want to prevent that. We want everyone to live. And that's the whole point. The point is lives and safety, and that gets lost in the message. And first and foremost, what we're all there to do, which is bring attention to the Hammonds, who were very wrongfully convicted. They were, by the way, for your listeners, I'm sure they don't all have all the details, so let's just very quickly, I'd like to explain basically what they went to prison for. The BLM started a fire, which was a brush fire, for whatever reason that they started it, to clear the field of underbrush, whatever it was. The fire was approaching the Hammonds' property, and as a former volunteer for the New Jersey Forest Fire Service many years ago, the way you stop a fire is you choke it before it can get to you. So if you start a backfire, you choke it out. In other words, it doesn't keep spreading, and you save your house. That's what the Hammonds did. And that was fine, and they didn't hear much more about it. There was another incident where they created a preventative fire, and I think it went an acre and a half or something onto what was considered BLM land, but there is no such thing. It's kind of like public land. Didn't do any damage, and actually they admitted that it was better that it occurred for the property. There was no houses in that area. There's no lives or property that's put in danger. There was a narrative that came out that it put firefighters in danger. That's not true because no firefighters even responded. There were a couple of them sitting up on a hill eating sandwiches. If you were to call that being put in danger, man, they let it go out. It was no big deal. It really wasn't. So anyway, the federal government came back and charged them as domestic terrorists under this law that was the something Terrorism and Death Penalty Act, something or other. I mean, these people were literally, they didn't do anything wrong. And then people tried coming out counter-narrative. They were trying to cover up poaching. Well, fire doesn't burn bones, knucklehead, so that wouldn't work. So that narrative got blown to smithereens right before it got started. And all these little rumors flying around, and they need to be straightened out. And the best way to straighten them out, I think, is through, you kind of hear how I'm reporting. It's just plain to the facts, not sensationalized, and tell people what it is and try and bring them to the table. Don't inflame emotions. Don't spread or promulgate fear or anything like that. I mean, just anyway, humble news, man. I guess it's kind of how it is. That's how it should be.
Well, exactly. But, of course, the reason why myself and Suzanne Posel made the unauthorized biography of Pete Santilli at this particular time is because he is there, and because there is a possibility that people might get hurt because there are weapons around, there are we take journalism, well, at least Suzanne takes journalism very seriously. Me, I don't take it that seriously. However, when we're working together, on the other hand, I'm about the principles of journalism. The principles of journalism are pretty straightforward. It's about being honest. It's about being real. It's about taking responsibility for giving people information in a timely manner when they need it in a credible way, in which case it might actually help them in a real way, or at the very least help them to understand what is happening. Now, that is not in any way, shape, or form the modus operandi of Santilli. We have indeed seen a video released just today, I believe, where he is yelling and screaming and talking over one of the people who was helping him. get his shows out, right? Mark Connors, I believe. Have you heard of this man?
I have not, and I haven't heard of this video, but I can tell you a little story that fits right in with that.
One second, just before you do.
Go ahead.
Anyway, this guy, Mark Connors, with a very small YouTube channel, uploads one of Santilli's video in order to help Santilli, you know, get out to more people. That's what you do. That's why you upload videos with a, the mark of free-for-all and the sharing and so on and so forth. However, Santilli calls him up and starts screaming at him, saying, "That's my YouTube channel, these are my hits, I do it for my audience, and my this, and my that," you know, just totally repeating himself, wow, going psychotic, man, yelling and screaming and not letting the dude talk, and it just drove the dude nuts and just screamed back at him. So for anybody who wants to go watch that video,
horrible, man.
Burns, Oregon updates Santilli attacks Mark Connors live. And they had this conversation while they were both on air. And it made them both look like crazy people. But Santilli, most of all.
That's what people out there are going to think, that everybody's like on the inside. And it's not true. Just not true.
And this is what I was getting at, is that when you involve yourself with Santilli, let's say you would involve yourself with me, and then you did something that I didn't like, I would come and talk to you and say, "Hey, bro, why did you do that?" And then you'd explain to me, and I'd listen, and so on and so forth. We'd come to some kind of understanding, and I'd go, "Oh, okay, so no worries." But if you do something that Santilli doesn't like, he instantly turns into a demon on you and will not change. Even if he's completely wrong, even if he's fabricated something completely up and out of his own head, even if you're trying to help him, even if you're trying to pay him a compliment, if he even so much as has an inkling that you're not 100% his slave on his side, he will turn demon on you.
And as he turns on you, and as you see red flags, here's my one flaw. I'm truthful to a fault, and sometimes I share information with people that I think I can trust, and I can't. And see, here's the thing with Pete Santilli. If Pete Santilli hadn't done any of these red flag behaviors, I would have remained trusting him. I gave him a chance, and that was the truth. Ben, it's the truth. I told Zita the same thing, and he hurt Zita. He hurt her bad, but I told her the same thing. I said, "I know, you know, you might be mad at me, but I'm required, as a Christian, I'm required to give somebody a chance." And I gave him a chance. And as soon as I got close, I saw the same red flag pattern behaviors. And it's all the same thing again, man. And if somebody doesn't speak out and say something, if somebody isn't unafraid, like, "Look, I know I'm going to get painted, and that is what it is. And you folks out there, you better support me, because I'm sticking my neck out. I'm trying to show you something." And, you know, it is what it is. RTRTruthMedia.com. That's RTRTruthMedia.com. You know, and now, since Santilli outed me on the air as being some kind of armed arch felon, the police had to investigate. They can't let somebody just go off into the public that could hurt somebody.
Unless, of course, their name's Pete Santilli and they're on the fucking payroll.
Well, exactly. But see, if you raise awareness and you put somebody in a position where somebody may be dangerous, and you have to worry about that person, then you have to act. So in a way, I as much as that I stand against the jurisdiction, and I will argue against the jurisdiction based on historical fact and evidence that I think that we've recovered, other than that, I think that they felt that they did what they thought they had to do. And I can't fault people for wanting to protect lives and safety, you know, lives and property. And that's what I stand for. There's people's lives in there in the balance. They're in danger.
What I find real...
This is some real stuff, man. This is some real stuff. And sensationalized could be tragic. That's all I'm saying. I don't want to attack. I don't want to attack every aspect of Pete Santilli. That's not my goal. It's not my agenda.
Yeah, that's my agenda. I'll just say that right now.
I understand. I know.
However, there's a reason for that agenda. Is because not only did he steal the name Guerrilla Media off me and the concept of it, not only did he take down my YouTube channel, but a deeper realization dawned.
It shows real ethical problems. They're real ethical problems.
Tom, let me finish. A deeper realization has dawned. It is not me that I'm fighting for anymore. This is what really surprised me when I was really thinking about it the other night. I don't care about me anymore in regards to Santilli. I don't care about what he did to me or what he's planning or what he's saying on radio right now, no doubt. What I care about is the many, many people that he has hurt over a long track record. What I care about is the activists, the honest, decent people of the United States with integrity who do love their freedom, who do support the Constitution, who do not lie, who do not cheat, who do not damage other people or their private property, because they swore an oath not only to defend the Constitution, but also the laws, therefore, of the United States, including assault, yep, battery, theft of intellectual property, defamation of character. These are laws of the United States that Pete Santilli has broken. Not once have I ever seen him brought to justice. Not once has there been a time where Pete Santilli is unable to continue making his list of victims even longer. I do not live in the United States. I have only been there once as a child, and I will never be able to go there again because of my cannabis convictions. But even I know that anybody who is in that position in the United States at these protests that are being led by somebody like this is in deep trouble. And I felt the need, the urge, and the responsibility to do what I can, regardless of the consequences, to protect my brothers in the United States who are fighting against tyranny, who do not deserve to be set up, who do not deserve to be abused, who do not deserve to have their reputations tarnished by the lies and malignant nature of this horrific person. I will not abandon those people who are doing the right thing just because a real evil person will give me consequences for doing so.
Well, you know, sometimes I put my faith in God's, and Penny, I got to tell you that, you know, we're going to have to leave it in his hands to a point, brother. I'm not going to make a career or a crusade. I'm coming, basically, I came on your show because I know that you were eyes in during that trucker's ride for the Constitution, and I fall back upon my original assessment of this man. Now, look, my life wasn't always perfect, and I've made a lot of mistakes, and when I was in a lot of pain, Lyme disease, it drove me crazy, and it hurt every aspect of my body. I went into a coma. I had a really rough time in my life, and I made a lot of mistakes, but there's one thing I never ever did. I never harmed another human being. Never, ever put anybody else's life in danger or jeopardy or anything like that. And when you take to the air in a certain sensationalistic way, and when you antagonize and bullhorn, I know a lot of people out there like to see that kind of stuff, bullhorning the FBI, and I don't like to see that stuff. I don't think that it's appropriate. I think that it's, in fact, I think it's inflammatory, counterproductive. It prevents two sides from being able to think rationally and be able to discuss things rationally. And I stand on that assessment. I think that it's reasonable, and I think that anyone that hears my assessment and the way my outlook on this should understand that the first thing that you need when you're trying to discuss a matter between two parties is the absolute most serene, absolute most calm, absolute most relaxed setting that you can make it. So in order to diffuse the situation, And you hear by the tone of my voice the psychology behind what I'm saying, there's deep thought behind these things. And when people are emotionally involved and spiritually involved, it could be tragic for any entity to take on posture that fulfills the other one's expectation of what certain things supposed to look like. And that's all I'm saying. It's almost like people understand that really good Christian folks are not going to allow other really good Christian folks to be mowed down into the ground. Knowing this, if someone intentionally instigates, knowing that someone will feel morally and ethically obligated to do something about it, whose fault was it to begin with, sir? I'm talking Hegelian dialectic here.
Yeah, we can't...
That's my assessment.
Yeah. I think that one of the most important things that has to be done is again, focus on the issues. Now, a lot of people have called me jealous, my wife told me this morning, asked me this morning, Vinny, are you keeping screenshots of all the comments of the Pete Santilli fans on your videos and stuff? And I go, no. She goes, but I love them. They're so funny. And I was just thinking about it. And I was like, oh my God, you're right. Because this is in fact, the one issue, about Santilli that is the most insidious is that sometimes he doesn't even need to do the dirty work himself. He's got plenty of people who blindly follow him who are more than willing to give you abuse and are trying to destroy your reputation. Vinny Eastwood, are you
they
kidding?
Like
go
fame.
Suck on
they
a
like
Kiwi. Why don't you go to Oregon and report the truth? Stop trashing Pete. You can't even put a picture of yourself on your channel, apart from the fact that I do webcams and every single video that I do has lots of pictures of me on the opening credits. Shut the fuck up, Vinny. Worrying about your own fucking country. Stop try to make a buck off of Pete. Like, these fucks are stupid. They're fucking stupid, and they're fucking rude, right? They're rude, they're stupid, they're mentally unstable, and 99 times out of 100, they have zero subscribers. Zero subscribers. Zero videos. That's just the ultimate insult to me, is like... Okay, let me just explain something. When I was a salesman, I saw other salesmen around me manipulating and lying and deceiving people, right? Because they wanted their money, right? And I see Santilli doing those exact same things to people, and the reason why I'm no longer a salesman and literally cannot even pick up the damn phone to make a business call to get money. I can't even physically do it. Because I go into a stress response and I start freaking out and stuff, because that was how traumatic my job was at the time, right? I can't do it. And I see him doing it. And I see him doing it again and again and again. And you know, here's the problem, man. People don't realize the mindset of what they're dealing with here, okay? How can this person sleep at night? It's because he doesn't have a conscience to keep him awake. When you go to sleep at night, you find it very difficult to go to bed, don't you? Because you're always thinking about all the terrible shit that is going on that you heard about on that day. You're always thinking about it, aren't you? And it disrupts your sleep. Santilli, out like a light.
Oh, Lord. Okay, Vinny. All right. We got it, brother. Got it.
Sorry, man. Pretty upset about it, eh?
I got you. I know. But look, man, I just because, dude, I have a different way, that's all. And you know what? That's okay. And it should be okay, and it shouldn't be a problem, but it's like, I don't know, it's an effect, and it only seems like it shows itself mostly when alternative media or alternative individuals or during live streams, or it's just a false reality, man. I don't like how he
calls people up to give them abuse while he's on air. It's like, that's really deceptive. Yeah. It's just unethical, right? And I believe that something has to be done to out and stop him. And I really thank you for joining this course, because a lot of people have now started to upload these videos and things like that. But I'm not sure if it'll work. Again, I mean, we had a conversation earlier on in the show about the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement being signed in New Zealand, and I was just very, horrible. Very yeah. sad. Very, very sad, right?
Unconstitutional, unlawful, usurpation, all the way, and yeah.
But I just felt sad because I didn't know if we'd be able to stop him, and I feel the same sadness because I don't know that whether with your efforts or my efforts that people will know the truth about what's going on in Oregon or know the truth about Santilli, regardless of how hard we try. But we owe it to their future victims to try, you know, because they don't know what's coming their way yet. They just don't know. That's what's I feel very conflicted within me at the moment, is that I get accused of being jealous, of having, you know, some kind of evil agenda to mind my own business and stuff like that, by the very people who are currently being lied to, being scammed, and following a really, really nasty man into oblivion. I can't just sit back and watch it happen without doing something. It must be done because there really isn't anybody else doing it in quite the same way. But hopefully, and maybe this is the reason why I started up the Pete Santilli Exposed Facebook page, those people who have woken up to what Pete Santilli is will go to that Facebook page and realize that they're not the only one, that they are not alone, that there's actually a place where you can share what he has done to you, what he is doing to you, and so that those people will have someone to go to for support when they need it the most. That's what's happening right now. People need support because you cannot go up against Santilli yourself. He came after me and Suzanne Posel at the same time. So naturally we banded together to protect each other in the same principled manner that Guerrilla Media was founded upon, the phalanx principle, a shield that you guard the person to your left with. You do not try to protect yourself. You only protect the person next to you because they are doing the same thing to the person next to them, and so on and so forth. An unbroken chain of shields to defend against any number of attackers and any kind of attacks. They will be fruitless attacks if you are banded together, if you support one another, if you truly, genuinely care about each other enough that you will brave the fire and the lightning storm in order to bring them in out of the rain. Ladies and gentlemen, you have been listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My guest has been Thomas Lakovara Stewart. You can check him out on RBN, and you can also check out his website as well, RTR Resurrect the Republic. I believe that's RTR.com, if I'm not mistaken. But yeah, it's a pretty bad situation. RTR Truth Media. Go Google that. You've got the Facebook page, and ResurrectTheRepublic.com is indeed the website where you can check out some real journalism that's happening down there in Oregon. Thank you very much for coming on the show and sharing with us, Thomas. I know things are very hard for you right now, and people should be watching your broadcast to get some accurate reporting out of there. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm off.